Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio and Joe DiBiase. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Now we got a bunch to get to right off the top here on the Extra Point Show. First of all, I was just informed. I didn't know this. I was doing a bunch of stuff today, and I try to catch you guys as much as I can in the morning, you and Jeremy, that is Joe, and I was just told you had Lindy on today. I had no idea. How'd that go?
It went great. He was awesome to talk to. I thought it was weird talking to him. It was surreal talking to him, for sure.
Yeah, there was a different. How did that go? Probably a little different you than Jeremy, I would think.
A different energy. When we interview McDermott on this show, or when we were talking to Don Granato in the past, I don't know. I didn't even expect this, but the moment his voice was on the air, it hit me different. Like, I don't want to say it was nervous, but there was a different tension in the air for me, just because, he's my coach. He's the coach from the moment I remember hockey until, I'm in high school. So, it was super cool having Lindy on, and I'm definitely excited for him on those Tuesdays throughout the season.
What did he say about the team or anything? Anything that was noteworthy for you?
He agreed. This is not on the Sabres. He agreed with me that MacKinnon and Makar are, the greatest watch to watch all time because they literally move at a different speed. I love talking to him about the playoffs. He's watching it, and you can just tell, super into it and picking up cues from other teams. But I liked what he had to say in center, that it is vital, it's critical that you have especially your top two centermen kind of driving the bus. They didn't use those words exactly, but the comparison to what he had in New Jersey, Hughes developing into elite number one center once Lindy got there, and then Nico Hischier is a really good number two, and kind of thinking about Thompson and Cousins, and he talked about Thompson as a guy that he think has the elite offensive capability because we've already seen it. And he even was, you get a lot of coaches who just don't want to say anything that's even remotely critical of a player, even when it wouldn't be controversial, or they would just be scared of saying it. Mm-hmm. And there was Lindy today, he's not as offensive as Tage, but that's okay because that we want this, this, and this from him. And just even that, it's not even really that candid, but it's just, I'm just going to talk about hockey with you. And sure, I'm going to say in front of everybody that Cousins doesn't have as much offense to his game as Thompson does, and there's no one in the world that would even disagree with it. So why should you be afraid to say that in the first place? So just, even just Lindy, you can just tell. He's just talking hockey.
That's awesome. Good for you guys. Good for him. Is that I'm sure that interview's on demand, WGR550.com. Yep. People can check that out. That's Lindy Ruff on today with Jeremy White and Sneaky Joe. That's awesome right there. Speaking of hockey, did you see Andrew Peters' tweet today, this morning?
I missed that. What did Andrew say?
Okay. Well, there's a reason I'm bringing this up. He wrote, Owen Power for Mitch Marner, who says no. And what's funny about that is, I'm going to tell you something, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The other day, I was texting with a Leafs fan friend of mine. And I said, man, what is going on? And I'm going to read you exactly word for word the tweet, the text back to me, okay? He said, "Ugh, don't get me started. Super disappointed. Austin is just sick. Sounds like a bad virus. It happens. But Mitch Marner may have to be shipped out. He's been bad." And then he wrote, this is like 3 days ago, "Marner for Owen Power would be a great deal for both teams." And that's a Leafs fan friend of mine. And now I have Andrew Peters writing that. What do you think about that?
I love it. I don't think you're getting Mitch Marner for Owen Power personally. But sure, like I think sitting here right now, he's going to be traded. I think Marner is going to be the big
whale.
Okay, make
sure you say which guy when you say
Marner,
he, who
thank
do you,
you
mean?
Sorry, Marner. Okay. I think Marner is going to get traded. There's infighting on the bench, and there's been two weird things. You've had two of their three big three, I would say, like the core young group in Toronto of Matthews, Nylander, and Marner. You had the other day yelling at each other on the bench, and then Matthews disappearing in the third, and I'm not buying for a second that a doctor pulled a team's best player during the second intermission of a playoff game because of the flu. That does not happen in professional sports, let alone the NHL, where guys play through everything in the playoffs. So I'm not buying that. I think something happened between the second and third periods of that last Leafs-Bruins game that, not a surprise, we just saw them doing it on the bench like 2 minutes before they went to the locker room. So I can only imagine what happened there. And then Nylander, of course, was missing for the first three games of the series, and nobody could figure it out, whether it was an injury or whether it was some disciplinary action by the team. So there's just a weird series for Toronto. They're about to lose. They're about to go 1-8 in playoff series as this core has been constructed. And I think time's up. You now have all this extra stuff on top of the results. How long do you get to win as a group? And I think they're great, and I think they've been completely screwed over by the playoff format over the last 8 years. But whatever, playoff format's not changing anytime soon. You don't win in this playoff format. And you look at their guys, who do you move? Tavares has 1 year left at 11. Nobody wants him anyway at 34 at $11 million. It's too much money. So he, to me, is like separate from this. Matthews, Nylander, and Marner. Well, Matthews just signed a 4-year deal, $13.25 million, and that
and
would be...
And he's Austin Matthews.
Exactly. He's Austin Matthews. The Leafs aren't going to want to do that in any world. So right. Then you have Nylander. Nylander has always been the guy that everyone's always thought, well, that's the guy that'll eventually fall on the sword. Well, he isn't even into his new extension yet. His first year of his $11.5 million extension kicks in next season. Meanwhile, there's Mitch Marner sitting there, 1 year left on his deal before unrestricted free agency at $10.9 million. I think Marner's the one that's going to go.
I mean, it makes sense from their standpoint. What about from the Sabres standpoint? Something like that. Like, to go, would you want to, are you willing to shop around Owen Power to get a forward the caliber of Mitch Marner?
I'm going to assume for this conversation that I have an indication or even an agreement that he is going to sign with me, and I'm not just trading Owen Power for a 1-year rental.
He does have a no movement. I just want to make sure, I understand that for anybody, like in Andrew's replies, it's when he says, who says no? Well, Mitch Marner says no. I get it. Like, we're trying to have fun here though, right? Like, would that make sense for both teams? I guess is the point. Because when people say Mitch Marner would say no, yeah, he may say, I don't want to do that. We get it. But what about just from the pure hockey standpoint is how I'm approaching
it. And by the way, I'll get the pure hockey standpoint is where I'll spend most of this, but just quickly on that. Marner, like, use the same logic that most Sabre fans and even myself have used for convincing a guy from Toronto to come to Buffalo. This is close to home, and especially that guy who has been dealing with the Toronto machine for 8 years, being a little bit more under the radar nationally. It wouldn't be locally, but nationally,
right?
You know, that might appeal to him a little bit, especially if the Sabres would pay him whatever he wants, which I imagine they would. So Marner, I think you can get to that part of it. But for hockey?
Well, can I say this on exactly what you just said? My Leafs fan friend, his next set of texts to me about this was exactly what you said. He said, The Sabres need a veteran playmaker. Leafs need a solid D. Marner is close to home, but still without the pressure of Toronto for that.
Right, exactly. So, and the age works. 27 years old. He's not so old that I wouldn't be willing to pay him. He's so good. I mean, for hockey, yes. Like, power, I'm still optimistic about. It's only two years in, and we saw how long it could take guys. Hedman took a little longer than some other top picks. Dahlin took a few years. Like, it happens with even Norris-level defensemen. So, power, I'm high on. But this team's ready for a final piece or even, like, a core piece. Like, I think Mitch Marner would step onto the ice tomorrow and arguably be the Buffalo Sabres' best player. Like him and Dahlin, they'd be neck and neck. The playoffs are where he gets criticized because the numbers are not the same there. But for regular season, which is what we care about at the moment for the Sabres, this guy gets, I mean, 390-point seasons. He probably would have had three more even, because in the last 6 years, the years where he didn't get to 90 points, this year where he got to 85 in 69 games, and then the two COVID-shortened years where he had 67 points in 59 games and 67 points in 55 games. I mean, if he played full seasons, we might be talking about a guy that would be going on six straight 90-point seasons. He would be the best forward on the Sabres tomorrow. So, yes, I time to win. Go get a player that talented, and sure, if I got to sacrifice waiting to see how good power is, I would be okay with that.
It's the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio, Sneaky Joe DiBiase. It's brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We'll take your calls on this if you'd like. You could chime in. Like, that's kind of an interesting... I just find it weird that Andrew tweeted that. I had a Leafs fan friend who's very invested in the Leafs text me that the other day. Mitch Marner for Owen Power. What do you think? I thought it was really interesting. So maybe Sabres fans, Buffalo fans have thoughts on that. You can call us at 803-0550. We'll get connected with you that way. I got one more thing on Sabres and Leafs, but I do want to bring up that the Jaguars have just released Zay Jones.
Ooh.
Any interest there?
Okay. Without doing any digging yet on what the last year or two's been like, other than knowing him from fantasy, I would say yes. Okay. Like, on the surface, he's someone I'd want to look more into immediately upon hearing that he's available. Yeah.
I wonder what the Bills would think, though. You know, that's a team that shipped him out not long after he was a second-round draft pick.
There have been stories, though, about... I'm trying to remember who did the stories. Maybe it was even Tyler Dunn, but I'll find
that.
He
did a story on Zay.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. That sounds right. About how much he really has grown from his time in Buffalo, like how much he needed to mature, and that when he left Buffalo, he kind of got the kick in the pants to do that. So I'll say up front, I hated him when he was here. On the field, never liked the player. Drop problems, wasn't someone that got open all the time, was pretty good yak guy, but not like so good. Like, I did not like him at all when he was on the Bills. But from what I've seen since, like, I thought he was pretty good at the Raiders. I thought he was pretty good with the Jaguars. And right now, if you give me pretty good, I feel like I could use a guy on my receiver core that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, again, he's not a burner. Again, he's kind of in the mold of the guys they have a little bit, though, isn't he? That's the thing. Isn't it redundant? The Bills talked about redundancy.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a bit redundant. He's more of a possession guy. He's not beating anybody down the field, really.
Right?
Yeah. And remember what kind of got him traded in the first place. And again, I respect your point and what you said. Like, guys change, and the Bills know that. It's not like, you know, I don't know if that would be held against him forever, but remember what happened right before he got traded? He didn't fight for a ball against the Patriots, like two of them maybe it was even. And
yep.
I just don't know if that's something that this regime, which, by the way, was the regime that traded him, would even go back and say, like, yeah, we just can't have that. Like, that's the way it ended here. But you never know, based on everything you just said, which is right. But he also doesn't really change the dynamic of the room that much, other than just add depth. Really?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, you know what he would be for me? He would be a better insurance policy if Keon Coleman is not going to be able to play the X to the degree that they need. I think he's going to get the opportunity to, but a lot of the analysts that I like on Coleman think he's going to be a good big slot player in the league. But that's not what Brandon Bean said. Brandon Bean said that he's going to play the X, and I think that is going to be very precarious. And if that doesn't work, then you've got Mac Hollins, but I'm looking at Zay Jones, and I guess I don't know like X versus Z, whatever, but I do know outside versus slot, and in the past couple of years with the Jaguars, he's been playing a lot more on the outside than he has in the slot. So that's what he would be for me, is a insurance policy if Coleman is not going to be ready to just take the bull by the horns.
At 10:30, coming up here at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Josh Furlong. Josh, he actually was on with us last year when the Bills drafted Dalton Kincaid. He writes for Utah Sports. He's a beat writer for Utah Athletics. And obviously the Bills just drafted Cole Bishop, the safety. But also they signed this guy named Keon Bills, right? We talked about
yes.
him yesterday.
Keaton
he's
knows,
also
right?
out of Utah. What is that? Keaton? Sorry, I said Keon. Yes, yeah. Thank you. Thinking of Keon Coleman. Keaton Bills. But, you know, we could talk with him about, you know, Cole Bishop and what his role was at Utah, but also what are the Bills getting in Keaton Bills. So Josh Furlong will join us at the bottom of the hour. One more question on Leafs Sabres. Which existence is better as a sports fan? What the Leafs have endured yeah. with their high-end talent and pressure and expectations of all these playoff failures? I did not realize until someone tweeted out yesterday, and I apologize for not knowing who this was. I have to go back and look. That it's the even though the Sabres have missed the playoffs for 13 straight years, they have four times as many playoff series wins since the last Leafs win. I mean, in that time.
Uh-huh.
Or since the lockout it was. Since the lockout. Since the lockout, which goes back 20 years now, 19 years.
Yeah.
Goes back 19 years. The Sabres have four times as many playoff series wins as the Leafs, despite missing for 13 straight seasons. Now, that sucks, missing 13 straight years. It is the longest drought of professional sports tied with the New York Jets. We've lived it with the Bills. We're living it with the Sabres. It sucks. I don't think there's any existence where that's you like that in any regard.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about the expectations in Toronto, the teams they've had, the talent they've had, getting Mike Babcock in there, drafting Austin Matthews, all the Tavares, all this major talent, and how many times they've fallen short, what is a better existence, right? Would you rather have that? To a degree, it's kind of like the Bills over the last 5 years, right?
I was just going to say that. It's kind of reminiscent. Like,
right.
It's a little different in that the Bills, honestly, like the Bills' existence in this window of we know we're incredible, but we can't get past Kansas City has been a shorter period of time than this Leafs existence has been. And also the Bills get further in the playoffs, even if it's only by a round, but that's maybe more has to do with, again, the format, because the Leafs, like, they do lose to the same teams. You know, like, they might have two Kansas Cities, though. They can't get past Boston, and they hadn't been able to get past Tampa. But it's more Boston. Like, if they lose to the Bruins here, in this 8-year period, where they're about to be 1-8 in playoff series, assuming they lose, this will be the third one, the third time against Boston that they go out in the first round. And that doesn't count the couple of years before that, where Kessel and Phaneuf were there, they blew that game 7 to Boston. So the Bruins, they can't get by no matter what they do. So, I don't know. Like, I think I'd still have to take them, though, because as much as you feel like you're living the same life, it's Groundhog Day over and over and over and over and over again, you still get the regular season, I guess, right? Like, I know you're going to get let down in the playoffs every single time, but you have more, I think you have more passion. I think the Sabres, yep. you missed the playoffs 13 years in a row, and even if we still sit here and callers call in, there are some out there that are still getting mad about them or have strong opinions on them, want to see them do certain things. There's also a segment of the Sabres fan base that's checked out. That's happened. There's a that's segment. Right. I don't know how big the segment is, but that's happened. And the Leafs, I don't know if they've checked out, and then you just have everybody angry all the time, which I might say is even better just because you still have the passion there.
Right. I think the way I look at it, I think the Leafs, I would prefer the Leafs' existence despite all of the failures because you still think you have a chance, right? Like, yep. At least you think you have a chance. You go into the playoffs thinking, okay, maybe this is our year. Maybe we can finally do this. They win a first-round series last year. Like, okay, here we go. Then they lose. but at least you think you're in it. You don't know how it's going to end. It seems like we've known how the season's going to end for the Sabres by January, basically, right? Over the last 13 years. I mean, you get 3 months of, hey, maybe this is, I guess it's not. You know, and that's just, you're playing out the string. It kind of doesn't matter. And what you said about checking out, that's right. Joe, it reminds me of, during the Bills drought, how much did we hear they're losing a generation of fans? And I always pushed back against that and said, look, I get it. Like, kids are growing up like, I want to root for the Patriots, or I want to root for whoever I see on TV that's winning, not the Bills. All it takes is to win a couple of seasons, and those kids are back. Their families are there. They're grown up Bills fans in Buffalo. You may lose a few. You're not losing a generation of fans. I get why people say that. And what you said about the Sabres, this is the same thing. Like, you could talk to a lot of little kids who might like McDavid and the Oilers, obviously, or whatever team out there. But all it takes is give me a little something to taste. You're not losing a whole generation. You're getting them back. They're just looking for something to cling on to in Buffalo they haven't had.
Right. But it does happen with some people, even if it's not a lot.
Sure.
Like my brother is prime example. Like, I believe he's an Eagles fan today and not a Bills fan because of the drought. If the Bills were good when he was a kid, I don't think he'd be an Eagles fan. But he grew up an Eagles fan because the Bills were always terrible. And I don't know, again, that could be only a select few, though. That I have a personal experience, so it's going to feel like it's a thing. It doesn't necessarily have to be. Because you're right, like, the moment the Bills got good, it was even really before, right? Just because of the tailgating scene. That, like, all my friends were going to games, even at the end of the drought, even when Tyrod was the quarterback. Like, everyone was going, everyone was Bills fans, and everyone was right there, ready to go nuts the moment Allen was their quarterback. So, is the Sabres different, though, for that? Because you don't have the event of the game. Like, even when the Bills would be 5-5 hosting
the
Jets, like, the event of the game was still a thing, and you just don't have that with the Sabres.
I agree with that. I think that at least, you know, tailgating kind of saved that in a lot of ways, right? All the nonsense that we've talked about and seen that has gone on in tailgating. And I always say this, like, people, I go on these radio shows you do, and people talk about Bills Mafia and jumping through tables and all the things that go on, the crazy, stupid stuff. And I'm like, look, that's not really what it's about, but here's what happened. Like, they're in this drought, and what you said, you're still going to the event because you want to go, but the football game's not the thing because the team stinks. So I'm going to be out here in the parking lot and just basically have a really good time because this is my outlet every weekend. And, oh, by the way, while that was happening, cell phones with video came about, right? I mean, now we're putting all these things out there and it's going viral and everybody thinks that's what Bills Mafia is about. You're right. That's not the Sabres. I would also say, though, the difference is, and of course we see hockey on national television, it's not like football, though. It's not like these teams are in your face all the time. If you, like, to become an Edmonton Oilers fan, you'd have to watch them a little bit more. It's not like seeing the Pittsburgh Steelers on primetime every week when during the drought.
Right. No, that's definitely true. So, all that circling back to Toronto a little bit, like, Toronto, I don't know, for them it might be more of that, though. Right, like where the game is an event, right? Especially because tickets are so hard to come by there that if you get the chance to go to a game, it's like, all right, you know, they might have already clinched a playoff spot, but it's a Friday night in March and they're hosting the Lightning. Like that's that city's that's their Bills game, I think. Is it, without living there, you know, that's the perception, is that's their Bills game. So I don't know. I think it's probably You live that existence in Toronto because you'd still have hope. You still have the superstar. You still feel like, you know, well, we've got Matthews. Well, we've got a couple of these other guys. Maybe not all of them will stay, but there's this talent level here where, all right, if we just do this different, or if we just do this different, we just fire this coach and bring this guy in. Like, you might always feel like you're one step away, which I think is very different than where there have been times with the Sabres where it feels like they are 15 steps away.
That's right. And now the Sabres, another new head coach, Lindy Ruff. And, of course, Jeremy and Joe had Lindy on this morning. You can check that interview on demand, WGR550.com. We are still kind of reading all the analysis about draft grades and, you know, draft, you know, just kind of great, like I said, grading or analyzing the draft, I should say. And I think that for the most part, like, I haven't seen people going all in on the Bills draft was great, the Bills draft was horrible. It wasn't that. It's still the talk of how did you let Kansas City go up there and take Xavier Worthy? I think that generally the consensus is the Bills got some pretty good football players here. We understand what they're doing. They added their wide receiver room, but where were more wide receivers? That's what I've seen. I don't think I've seen any wild takes about how, like, the picks themselves, Joe, were either, oh my God, they're amazing, or oh my God, they're horrible. Anybody who says the Bills had a poor draft generally revolves around the trade they made at 28 to allow Kansas City to go up. Not even they traded at 28. That is, it was about Kansas City.
I would. Those are the two biggest complaints, right? Is one, you only drafted one receiver and you traded with Kansas City. I think those are the two things.
I think so. Yeah. One of the teams that had a really good draft, apparently, just based on value, a lot of people say is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Yesterday, did you see from who was it? One of the former Steelers. There was a former Steeler who said this. He said he tweeted out, and I got to go back and find this, who it is, that the Steelers are about to add a significant offensive playmaker. Hmm. And now other media in Pittsburgh's like jumping on and going, yeah, that's not true.
it's going to be Zay Jones.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. I've immediately seen people connecting him there to Pittsburgh. But Ayuk is probably the name people think of the most. Okay.
Bryant McFadden said it. He said, here's the tweet. Ooh, Omar is working. The Steelers are very close to landing a significant playmaker.
Okay.
And then other people are like, I don't think that's true. And then some people are, the biggest reply is, okay, please don't tell me it's Hunter Renfrow.
Yeah, right. What does significant mean? It is worth pointing out that Ayuk tweeted at Mike Tomlin. Like, his only tweet in the last, like, 2 years was he came out of the woodwork to tweet at Mike Tomlin, you know, something about Pittsburgh. So, you never know. Like, that could be the move, but Pittsburgh's also not usually a team like that, are they? Has Pittsburgh ever been the team that goes and trades its number one pick for a star offensive playmaker?
Generally not, but they have operated differently this offseason by trading for or by landing Russell Wilson, by trading for Justin Fields. I think they've done some different things this offseason. Deontay Johnson, right? Was that who did they trade?
Yep,
Deontay Johnson, right? I mean, this is just they've operated a little bit differently, a little bit more aggressively, so I wouldn't necessarily kind of dismiss this notion. All right, I was on BetMGM last night with Trista Crick and the folks over there, and twice now I've been asked by that panel a question that my answer hasn't changed. I want to throw that at you, Joe, a little bit later. But when we come back, Josh Furlong, who covers Utah sports, is going to join us here on the Northtown Extra Point Show, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We're going to talk about the addition of Cole Bishop and Keaton Bills, the offensive lineman. Stick with us here on a Tuesday on WGR.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Awkward smile.
Pressure again. Runs away from it. Throws on the run. Caught! Touchdown! Dalton Kincaid!
So last year, the Bills make Dalton Kincaid their first pick. They trade up for him, the tight end out of Utah. He had a fantastic rookie season, of course. I mean, steps right in. He breaks all sorts of records for, you know, Bills rookies, and it's really one of the most historic rookie seasons ever in the NFL for a tight end. Before he stepped on the field, we had Josh Furlong join us. Josh actually covers Utah Athletics and is the sports director of KSL.com Sports. He joins us again because the Bills drafted Cole Bishop with their second pick out of Utah and also reportedly are going to sign an offensive lineman named, appropriately, Keaton Bills. Josh, it's Sal here in Buffalo. Sal and Joe here in Buffalo. Thanks a lot for joining us again. We appreciate talking to you.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to be here.
All right, man. Well, the Bills draft Cole Bishop with their second pick, a safety. It seems like this is a guy that's very, very smart and probably really kind of fits into an NFL defense, especially like one like Sean McDermott, pretty well. But how quickly can he do this? What did you see from him at Utah?
Yeah, Cole is one of those guys. He's a student of the game. Honestly, he loves film. He loves to get in there. And I know sometimes you say that about some guys and they don't really love it as much, but that's Cole. I mean, he really just wants to be the best player that he can be. He you know, a lot of people here call him kind of the baby-faced assassin because he looks like he's 12. But he'll come out there and hit you hard. And he's just a guy that whatever system he's going to play in, he's going to study it. He's going to work his butt off to be able to get there and do whatever is needed. So I'm really fascinated with kind of his fit there in Buffalo and kind of what he's able to do. I think he's got a lot of upside and he's still got a lot of potential there. And so I'm curious to see kind of how he's utilized, but he's definitely a guy that is going to have a great opportunity in the NFL, especially with the Bills.
Now, he played free and he played strong, and I asked him about that at his introductory press conference. Here in Buffalo, as with a lot of NFL teams now, they're interchangeable. There's really no difference anymore between the two. But he said early in his career there was a difference at Utah. Did you feel he was better suited for one role or the other?
For a while, it was more, you know, he would lay the blow. So a lot of times you put him as the strong safety, you put him in the box. They like to a lot of times put him in and kind of play him as a hybrid linebacker role. There was kind of question early on, too, is if he could put on more size, would he go play a linebacker and would that be his natural position? But I think he kind of stayed with that in you know, Utah and eventually kind of expanded his role into that free safety / you know, kind of whatever. Like you said, like it's kind of more of a hybrid role, and that's essentially what Utah has done over the last few years, too. So there's many times, you know, where he'd play in coverage. You know, he'd be up in the box and he'd try to go get a sack or something like that. So I think he's really versatile in what he's able to do and being able to kind of play whatever position they need him to play, knowing that obviously the NFL is changing more to a positionless role in safety. So he's able to do whatever. He can mix and match. He can lock it up with tight ends. You know, he can get up close to the line and do whatever he needs to that way. So he's kind of pretty versatile that way.
What, in your opinion, would he have to improve upon to win or to just be a regular contributor right out of the gates here?
Yeah, it's one of those things where he's very instinctual and he obviously wants to go make the hit. So I think one of the things that he needs to still continue to work on is just maintaining coverage, maintaining kind of what the vision of the entire play is, and not just on the guy that he wants to go hit. He got much better at that, and I think, you know, with time he'll continue to get there. But there's definitely times where you see him, he kind of gets out of position because he wants to go make the hit or make the play. And that's not necessarily a bad thing because, like I said, he's instinctual and he knows what the plays are. He understands what the opposing teams are going to do. But sometimes that puts him out of position in a way that doesn't help if he needs to be that last line of defense and helping there. So if there's going to be the biggest struggle outside of just the normal rookie routines and different things that way, I think that's probably his biggest area of improvement, is just being able to maintain coverage, understanding where he needs to be at all times.
I think it was you guys yesterday, Joe, right? You and Jeremy. Jeremy brought up one of the knocks on him is his arms are a little shorter than what you'd like, so maybe missed tackles have been a bit of an issue, right? I think, didn't Jeremy bring that up?
Yeah, we talked about that. We saw that analysis somewhere. I forgot exactly where. But yeah, Josh, that like his arms are a little shorter, and maybe also what you're talking about going for the big hit, that his missed tackle rate was a little higher than some people liked?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think this is one of the things that, you know, his physical size in terms of, you know, wingspan or whatever that may be, isn't going to necessarily be his strongest suit. But, I mean, if he gets the hit, you know, and that's going to be different in the NFL, right? But, like, if he gets the hit, he generally has a good consistency in being able to take a guy down or at least lay a significant blow that allows other people to get to him. But yeah, I mean, he's not that guy that, you know, you're going to have him reaching for some guy off the edge and he's going to be able to get him quickly. He has to square up. He has to be able to be there. He has to lay the blow in the correct fashion. But I mean, when he hits hard. So, I mean, that bodes well in the NFL, obviously. So I'm curious to see how that works and how that translates with the Bills.
Josh Furlong joining us on the West Her Hotline. That said, looks like he can actually get after the quarterback a little bit if you put him in the right spot on the line of scrimmage and let him go after it.
Yeah, I mean, he can hit those gaps really well. He's good in coverage to be able to disguise it and make sure that he can kind of get in and really just kind of mix up what he needs to do. You know, his defensive coordinator at Utah, Morgan Scalley, really loves just different disguises and trying to be able to utilize him, show him playing in the box like he's going to play a coverage in a tight end or different things that way, and then instantly blitzes him in for a sack. So he's a deadly weapon. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, you really have to be on your toes with. He's always one of those guys that kind of finds a way to make a play wherever on the field. Obviously that wasn't always his role, but he kind of played it in a large way, like a linebacker where he can just kind of just roam the field and kind of do what he needs to. So, I think he's got that potential. I don't know that he has quite the breakaway speed in the NFL that maybe he needs to get, and maybe that'll continue to come, but he 100% can get after that quarterback and do some damage.
All right, let's talk about him and his high IQ and leadership qualities, because I believe the Bills really were after players like that this specific draft to replace all the leadership that walked out the door, and especially the two safeties they had here for 7 years, Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde. He might be asked to come in here and really kind of have on-the-job training to be a real, you know, big part of what they do on the back end, to call signals, understand the defense. What did you see from him in that regard as far as how well he could be acclimated to the leadership role that might eventually be asked of him here?
Yeah, Cole's one of those guys that he's not going to just step in and try to kind of take over, right? He's not kind of the alpha, so to speak. He comes in there, he's humble, he's quiet, at least in general settings, right? He's a really, like, polite person and really nice that way. But you get him on the field and he's very communicative. He's able to kind of really give that confidence and kind of give people in front of him that confidence that he knows what's going on. You know, he's calling out signals, he's calling out different things to be able to make sure that everybody knows. And so, you know, it's one of those, that quiet leadership kind of way. It's not that he doesn't show it. He definitely does. It's more of just kind of, he's going to sit back and listen. He's going to kind of digest it, understand what the playbook is. He's going to be one of the best guys out there that understands what's going to happen, and so that allows him to be able to see things better, obviously in the safety position. But then when he's on the field, he's 100% vocal. There was never any doubt in his ability to be able to kind of rally people around him. People respected him. People on the defense absolutely loved him and wanted him to be able to kind of be there. But he's not the guy that's going to just instantly jump out and he's going to try to demand attention. He's definitely a humble, polite person that just kind of keeps to himself in that regard. And But yeah, I mean, he's easily going to be in the mix and want to make sure that his presence is known.
The Bills have not made anything official on undrafted free agent signings, but there's a lot of reports that Keaton Bills, aptly named, maybe the best named player fit for a team we've ever heard of because his name is actually the name of the team. Keaton Bills, an offensive lineman from Utah, reportedly signing with the Buffalo Bills. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, I mean, he's, like you said, that's a perfect fit. I mean, when it happened, I was like, well, no duh, he has to go to the Bills. So, but no, he's an older guy. I mean, he served a 2-year mission for his church, and so that kind of set him back in terms of time at Utah, and then he played to his full senior year, and so he played a long time. But one thing with Keaton, he was a 3-year starter. He's very athletic in maybe not always the way that translates in terms of offensive linemen, but he's able to move, shift around. His hand placement isn't always the best, but he's always going to kind of give his best. I project him probably more as a backup with a consistent role there and maybe some playing time in the starting unit. But I think with him, his upside, probably he's already about there, right? I don't know how much you're probably going to be able to get more out of him. With that said, I think he's got the skill set. He's got the talent. He had a great offensive line coach that taught him the technique that I think he can be in a good system if he kind of gets that time. He's one of those guys that you kind of forget about him just because he's so good, and so you don't worry about him. It's just a matter of kind of learning the NFL system, learning what he needs to do, and just his age kind of being the biggest factor against him right now.
All right. This is important because even if he makes the practice squad, I feel like that jersey is going to be up in the team shop. It'll be a popular one. Yeah.
No doubt. Hey, Josh, I don't have no idea like how much you covered or plugged into it, but we're very interested here in Buffalo in hockey and a team maybe going to Utah. And it looks like it is, obviously, now, the Arizona Coyotes. Like, what's the vibe there for the NHL coming to Salt Lake City?
Yeah, they're really stoked. I mean, it was one of those things that seemed to happen overnight. It was, you know, there was a lot of talk. Ryan Smith, the owner of the Utah Jazz, he made his, you know, intentions known that he wanted to get an NHL team, and they were expecting to go through the expansion route. And so there was always kind of like, okay, maybe in 5 years or so, or maybe longer, you know, we'll get an NHL team here. But then it just kind of instantly flipped, and the fan support here already is really high. I mean, people are really excited for hockey, probably more than I expected. We have a low level professional hockey team here, the Utah Grizzlies, and they're fine, and people go out to it, but the reception was incredible. They sold out the Delta Center when they had their kind of little fan night when they brought the team in to kind of welcome them. They were turning people away at the door. I mean, there was a lot of support. People are ready. They want to embrace it. They want another professional team and kind of show, like, look, Utah is a place that can represent a lot of these teams. So I'm really fascinated to see how it goes when they actually play games here, but I have no doubt that they're going to, you know, fill that arena. They've already sold out their allotment and more for season tickets. So It'll be interesting to see how it goes, but I think it'll be a great opportunity here.
Do you know, by the way, I don't know if you don't, that's fine. Do you know, by the way, is there part of this that they're trying to get an arena that's connected to their Olympic bid?
There was talks of that. So Ryan Smith had kind of made some gestures that way as of right now. And I don't know that I fully kind of believe it. They've said they're going to use that money to just renovate the Delta Center and just kind of have that at the home of the Jazz and this NHL team. But I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they still try to do it. Ryan Smith really wants to use it to revitalize some of Salt Lake and kind of get more of that fancy arena. He really likes that kind of stuff. He's a tech guy, so he really wants to be able to kind of showcase what he has and give the best for everybody that comes in.
All right.
Josh, thank you so much for doing this again. Who knows? Maybe next year the Bills have another high draft pick from Utah again, and we'll have you on. Thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Let's go 3 for 3 next year, huh?
All right, you got it. You got it. Josh Furlong right there covers Utah sports. Great job there by him. Joe, are you good at like Hot Shot, the basketball game at an arcade, Hot Shot?
I am, actually, I would say.
Are you good at skee-ball?
No, definitely not skee-ball. Hot Shot,
okay,
not
well, maybe
skee-ball.
Okay, maybe Hot Shot's more your thing, because soon you might be able to make some money playing it. I'll explain when we come back on the Extra Point Show.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Okay, Joe, I believe you saw this story. You talked a little bit about it. And maybe a lot of our listeners haven't seen it yet, but Dave & Buster's apparently is going to allow, get this, arcade betting.
Yep.
Betting on your own arcade games. Here's what it says from NBCPhiladelphia.com. Customers can soon make a friendly $5 wager on a hotshot basketball game, a bet on a skee-ball competition, or on another arcade game. The betting function, expected to launch in the next few months, will work through the company's app. Okay.
All right. This is a further indication that nobody carries cash anymore, because otherwise you could just say, hey, I want to bet $5 on this.
That is so true.
Now you got to go through the app.
Oh, man. That's right. I'm one of those guys. I don't carry cash, but I always try to remember to have a little cash just in case. I'm like, what if I got to tip somebody? I always think about that. What if I got to tip somebody something? I'm going somewhere. I'm like, oh, I got to tip this person. So I always think about that. But or maybe you go somewhere and they just it's some, you know, smaller store and they want cash. It's better than card. You got to pay a little extra, whatever. I think about that. But to your point about Dave & Buster's, that is correct. This is another step in just like the whole – We just gamble on everything now. Just bet on everything, it seems like. I mean, the NFL is just so much embraced. It's incredible. We've seen that as well and throughout sports. But you also see, you know, them trying to kind of play both sides and control it as much as possible. When it comes to this, though, particularly, like, I'm just wondering how to make sure, I guess, if you're not betting against the arcade itself and you're betting against a person, that's different. But if you're betting against the arcade... I've been to Dave & Buster's. I've been to a lot of these arcade places. I have a 10-year-old son. He loves going to things like this. There's always games where something happens where you figure out maybe how you can not necessarily manipulate it, but I would be worried that there'd be people who could basically take advantage of the system, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Would you would go skee ball over hotshot, though, for if you were going to make one of these bets?
I think so. I'm pretty good at skee-ball.
Okay.
We could combine. You're hot shot, I'm skee-ball.
Yeah. It could be a four.
I have a secret in skee-ball.
Two-game series. Aggregate.
I bank it. I bank it in I don't go straight in. I bank it.
Bank it.
I'm right-handed. I roll it, and there's a spot right before the final ramp as it goes, and I try to bank it right off that, and it comes up, and then it more softly lands in the circle.
Interesting.
It takes a little bit of steam off it.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. Different technique. You're banking it off the back? Is that what you said? You're banking
Nope. Off the side, but just before it goes up over the ramp.
I see. Okay. Well, if you got that figured out, maybe that's the trick. Maybe that's the way to do it. I, meanwhile, for the hotshot game, like I am one hand softly shooting while I already have the other, like the left hand on another ball. Like I'm going quick. Like I'm going as quick as possible. It's analytics, right? The more shots you get up, the more the higher the score is going to be, even if your percentage is a little bit lower.
That's right. Do you there's a game they have at Dave and Buster's where it's you take this like it's hitting like a gavel and it goes up, but it's not like how strong you can do it. Because if it goes all the way up, it's going to come back down the light, right? If you get too much, it goes up. But if you hit the very top light, the exact moment, you're going to get like 1,000 points, jackpot. But if you go a little bit too much, it's going to come back down. I don't know if you do you know what I'm talking about? There's these lights. They go all the way up. And if
yes.
you hit it right, if it stop right at the top, that's perfect. But if it goes right to the top and then comes back down, that's too much. Or maybe you have too little. Anyway. My son, he's 10 years old now. Last year, he's like, Dad, I watched this video on how to do this. I'm like, okay, here we go, right? And he's like, no. So they have like videos, and kids are watching these videos on secrets of the trade for all these games, of course. So he goes, no, I'm telling you, I know how to do this. And he kind of raises it up, and he just kind of lets it go. A certain little bit of pressure. He didn't really push it down. He kind of let it go. Joe, I am not kidding you. No exaggeration. 3 jackpots in a row doing it. Watching a video on how and I'm like, but how do you know the exact pressure? He's like, I just watched it and I did it a few times and then I got it to the point where I knew exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah. It's the type of stuff you get you banned from casinos. I don't know about arcades, but casinos you would get banned for that.
That is correct. That's like card counting, I guess. All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I was on BetMGM last night with Trista Crick and there a couple other hosts. And one of the hosts asked me a question again where he had asked me a couple months ago. And I feel like he was trying to validate his own opinion. And I'm like, nah, not really true. But I want to run this by you. And maybe I'm not thinking the right way about it. I'll explain all of that here next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio, Sneaky Joe DiBiase.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio and Joe DiBiase. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
There's a discipline to do the right thing at the right time and inside of a game. And if you can just focus on a game at a time, and if we don't sit back and we don't constantly talk about pressure and where we need to go, let's keep a real narrow focus on the game we're playing, win that game, move on to the next game, put the game away, whether it's a win, whether it's a loss, try to get better every day. We'll get to where we want to get. And I've used this expression that you've got to get comfortable being uncomfortable.
All right, that is Lindy Ruff, Sabres, new/old, but new again head coach. And he was on with Jeremy and Joe this morning. It seems like there's, it's not just, how do I want to say this, Joe? It's not just Lindy's style. I think what's happening here is Lindy has his style, and that's already what he said there, basically his style anyway. But it seems like it's Kevin Adams also saying, Lindy, I know what your style is. It needs to be even more like that. Like, we need this now. Like, this is what I want you to do. Like, there's been a clear message from the GM and the new head coach about accountability, working even more so than what we normally hear in coach speak, if that makes sense. You know what I mean, Joe? Like, It just seems like everyone wants all of us to know, hey, we're going in there to kick some butt. Right? That kind of thing.
Yeah. That's the messaging, at least.
Right.
And you would think it's going to be put into action to some degree. Lindy, though, is very clear, like, on how he has the biggest way he's grown is in how far you can push players. So that's not to say he won't hold guys accountable, but I like the videos that you can find on YouTube or on Twitter of him back in the day at practice just yelling and screaming at Vanek and Roy and Pominville and all these guys. Like, I'm not – he's also older, too, which, you know, I think just you get a little more – I don't think he's climbing over the bench going after the new version of Brian Murray on the other side. Anyways, so that's a part of it too, but I'm not
if
expecting...
If somebody elbows his captain and concusses him, he will.
Maybe. I don't... Maybe. He might be more mild-tempered than he was. I mean, it's the vibe I'm getting.
So do you mean, when you say how far you can push guys, you mean less now?
Yeah. I don't think he... the way he's talking, again, maybe more than what they've had before. But I don't think he's going to go in there and ride Dylan Cousins like he did Thomas Vanek. I do not expect that, the way he's talking.
Interesting. But at the same time, you have to in some way, because there's, again, this clear messaging of they weren't getting
yep.
that.
Yep. No, well, what he's saying a lot, and you can like this or hate it, what he has said a few times now is his biggest tool for accountability is ice time. Like, that is the thing okay. he can take away from guys. And last year, you know, maybe that's what this means. Maybe Granato, you know, this is, he did it with Skinner at the end, but during all those weeks and months where Cousins was not performing, did he ever get removed from the top six once? Just using him specifically. I'm not trying to individual like take him out of this. But did he ever get removed? Did he ever get put on the fourth line? Because I feel like with Lindy, if Cousins shows up to next year playing like he did this past season, that after a few games, you're going to see him on the fourth line with Zemgus Girgensons.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like that's the case, but here's the problem. Can you afford to do that when you're trying to win games as well, right? I mean, isn't that
yep.
this is we've had this discussion where last year there's JJ Paterka sitting down at the end of a bench next to Rob Ray, who's in the middle, right? In the between the benches.
Yep.
JJ is sitting there because he's not getting any ice time, and that's where they basically put him. And whatever, he sat there. I don't know if they put him there, but you get the point. Like, you're watching that and like, wait a minute. It's one of your best offensive players. Like, you need to win the game. That's got to be mm-hmm. a tough balance, Joe. And I'm telling you, if he does that, if Lindy does that, it may be totally justified and we can get it.
Mm-hmm.
If they lose games and that's happening, people are going to be pissed.
That's true. That's true. I would say this is why I think one key this offseason that they need to improve on, which was not true the case last year, is Granato maybe would even tell you this. I don't know. Like, what do you want me to bench Dylan Cousins for who? Who do you want me to put?
Right. Yes.
And you know, to be fair, actually, now that I'm thinking back, like Mittelstadt was on this team for 60 games. Like Mittelstadt was there, so maybe there were times where he was out. He was playing above Cousins. They just didn't move Cousins off a line. But last year there were lots of periods of time. Like, who would you take? Okay, you know, Skinner's having a bad game or a bad, you know, week earlier in the year, and you want to take him off the top line. Okay, who are you putting up there? Are you putting Victor Olofsson on the top line? Are you putting Tyson Jost up there? Are you putting Okposo? Like, this team didn't have the depth we thought they did. Part of that was Jack Quinn's injury, too, but forward-wise, they didn't really do much. They brought back Olofsson, Okposo, and Girgensons, and that made them pretty shallow when it came to forward depth and guys that, hey, someone's not playing well. Can I bump him down, put someone else in the top six? They didn't have a guy like that. And if I'm Lindy and I want to have the option to hold guys accountable by taking away some ice time, well, then what I'm telling Kevin Adams is you got to get me guys in the bottom six that are capable of going up. You got to right. get me. I can't have Girgensons on the fourth line and have him going to the top line if someone's not playing well. Like, I've got to have what did they have in 06? You know, we make all these comparisons. One thing they had in 06 was they had like 10 forwards that were capable of playing in the top six.
What about the people in Rochester? Would they even qualify because of their style to be that? You know what I mean? Like, you could say, I'm going to replace you with Jiří Kulík. But then Jiří Kulík's on the fourth line. That's not where he belongs. That's not what he does.
Well, I'm thinking even more top of the lineup stuff this upcoming year for that. Like maybe he's right to name here. Same with Savoy and Isaac Rosen. Like all these guys are about ready. Is okay. Maybe
I guess what I mean is if they're in Buffalo, they're not playing
well
fourth line, right?
They shouldn't.
You think
be.
They could?
They shouldn't be. I don't think. But if they're on. You know, if maybe that's their answer. Maybe Adam's answer right. or maybe their answer as a team is, we're going to call up two of the kids, and they're going to be playing in the bottom six. Maybe not in the fourth line, but maybe like a third scoring line. And, okay, if one of our veterans up top isn't playing well, well, guess what? We've got this kid that's really offensive, and he can go up there. And we're going to give him an opportunity instead. Like, maybe that's where their depth comes from. Is not. I still expect they're going to sign a center in free agency or trade for one. But maybe their scoring depth will be Kulik. It'll be Roseanne. It'll be Savoy.
The Sabres have... They're just at the bottom of the lottery odds to win the number one pick, meaning nobody below them can win it. They're the 11th place. I think I have this right, Joe, right? Whereas, yeah. Like, once the top 11 are the only ones who can get the number one pick. And the Sabres are 11. They have a 3% chance of winning the lottery. After that, Philly's in at 12. Philly can't go to number one. Is that correct?
Philly, I'm pulling it up right now, but I believe that's correct.
I don't think they can.
They can. They can go to number... They pull for, like, the top three still, I think. I think they can go up to, right. Like, two or three, but they can't go up to number one.
Okay, the draft lottery, by the way, is a week from tonight.
Week from tonight or tomorrow? It's a week from tonight? The 7th, right? Okay, no, that's right. Wait,
week
how does
from
that
tonight.
Work? First, second, third, fourth. Yeah, no, you're right. Week from tonight. Okay. All right, I have something to watch next Wednesday.
Next Tuesday.
Today's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
I'm all over the place. I need the days
I know
of the
you
week.
Are.
I need the days of the week clock.
Listen.
It's over there on Jeremy's side.
Well, listen, yesterday I'm on with Shope and the Bulldog, and I'm like, yeah, schedule out next week. And they're like, what? Next week? I'm like, yeah, that's like March 8th or 9th is going to come out.
Right.
I mean, they could push it out a little bit, but generally, I mean, Mike North even said it's generally that second week in May, and it's generally on a Thursday. I'm going to guess the schedule's out next Thursday. That's my guess. The schedule's out next Thursday. But it sneaks up on you fast. And even Shope and the Bulldog, like, wait a minute, didn't realize it was next week. Yeah, NHL draft lottery next Tuesday.
Yeah.
And most likely NFL schedule release next Thursday.
Yeah. So here, Tankathon does a good job breaking this down for every team. If you go to Tankathon, yep. Like the odds, the list of odds, the list of teams comes right up. But if you hit hit on pick odds, you get the odds by pick. So the Sabres will have a 3% chance of picking first, 3.2% at picking second. So if I'm doing the math right, that's like a 6% chance they'll pick in the top two. 0.1, I guess, only for the third pick. I don't know how that works, but okay. And then they're most likely to pick 11th, which is like 80%.
Yeah, 0.1. Okay, so there has to be something with you either get it or you don't.
You know why?
Right?
I know why.
You either get it or you don't? Okay, go ahead.
The only way that would happen, because they draw for the top three picks. Top three picks. So the only way they could pick third is if... I don't know. I was going to say if two teams behind them jumped them and they won the third pick, but the teams behind them can't pick first. So I guess I don't know. It's weird.
Philly has a better shot to win two, and Minnesota has a better shot to win three.
Okay, so I see. So they would get the third pick if someone behind them, like if Philly got the second pick and then they won the third.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that's why it's so unlikely.
That's the way it looks, basically. And, you know... So right now, the way it's scheduled, just so everybody knows, the Sharks have the best chance to get the number one overall pick, the Blackhawks number two, and then Anaheim number three. And then people, you know, you fall in line after that, and the Sabres are 11th. Like I said, that's next Tuesday night. Last night, I was on BetMGM with Trippy Crick, and I don't remember their hosts' names, my apologies there. But they brought me on, and one of them, I'll have to go get it, one of them, asked me a question a couple months ago I was on with them. And he seemed really dug in on how well the Bills on defense, they've lost so much, and oh my God, concern. Aren't you concerned? Concern on the defense. I'm like, nah, like Sean McDermott figures it out. Like, they'll be okay. They're always okay on defense. Like, look at what happened this year. They were decimated by injuries. And, you know, they'll be okay. So then last night I go on. And I think that he wanted me to validate his opinion again because he says, hey, last time you're on, talked about how, like, you were confident in the defense, but then they lost Jordan Poyer and lost Micah Hyde and they lost Tre'Davious White. So what do you think now? Are you concerned about the defense? And I'm like, nah, they have Sean McDermott. I'm like, McDermott's going to figure it out. That's what he does. Am I off? Like, should I be like, yeah? I'm like, dude, I said, they're getting Matt Milano back. They have him and Terrell Bernard. This is what I told him. I said, their linebackers are going to be great, right? Like, that's a great strength of them with Milano coming back. Daquan Jones will be back healthy. Their defensive line will have a healthy rotation. It always does. I said, you could definitely make an argument that there's a concern at safety until they prove it. But McDermott's always been able to get safeties to play. I mean, it's just what they do. It's his system. So I'm not concerned there, and that's what I said to him.
I'm with you. I don't think I'm being disrespectful by saying this. You tell me if I'm wrong. Let's start with safety specifically. If I take the names off the back of the jersey, the Bills had two average safeties last year. Correct?
I think you're right.
I think they had average safeties.
The way they played. Look, the proof is in. They moved Jordan Poyer out of safety
right
later in the season in passing situations.
Right. Rapp played more on the back end, and correct, Poyer got moved down. So, correct, like, what they're replacing at safety, they're replacing big figures. And in the long term, you're replacing guys that for 5 years at least were playing at an elite level, like the best safety duo in football for a 5-6 year period running. So if you want to go back a few years, sure, they have a lot to live up to. They have a lot to replace. But from just last season, Poyer and Hyde were not playing at all pro levels last year. Poyer looked slower than ever. He was getting beat in space by running backs that I had never seen prior in his Bills career that happened to him. And Hyde, I don't remember seeing a lot of mistakes. I just feel like I didn't see as many like big splash impact plays. So maybe a little quieter from him isn't a bad thing, but just wasn't playing at the all-pro level. So Rapp, Mike Edwards, Cole Bishop. I don't know. I feel like there's a very good chance that they at least give me what I had last year there. If anything, and then Tre'Davious White is on the list of names, but Tre'Davious White only played, was it two full games last season? And they replaced him already. Like, Rasul Douglas did it. He was great when he came in last year. So I don't want to count Tre'Davious White even as a big loss. It's a big name. It's an emotional loss. But I feel like they've already replaced him, too. So, like, I think if that person is coming at you with, well, all the names they've lost, I don't think he mentioned the right one. The biggest player right, I think they have to replace is the guy who led them in sacks last year.
So what I also said, and it's by the way, I believe it was Ryan Horvat. Ryan Horvat's the one that brought it up. And I think that he might be, and by the way, Ryan does a great job. This is not at all.
Yeah, we've had Ryan like Horvat. Ryan. Yep.
Right. What I'm saying is, I think Ryan, his position is, you should be more concerned about the defense from the outside looking in, like, this is a concern. Why aren't you more concerned? And I'm like, yeah, I'm really not. Like, if you're closer to the situation, you see what this guy does. Sean McDermott does with defenses. I said, I would say that, yeah, until they prove it, you might be concerned about safety.
Yeah.
I did also say they do have to, because he also said, well, Von Miller had no sacks last year. And like, yep, that's true. And they're going to rely on him to be better. I would definitely say you have to get more out of your pass rush, numbers-wise. But I'm just not concerned about the defense as a whole.
Yeah, I'm not either. I think, you know, are they going to be the best defense in football? You know, that might be biting off a lot because they do have, I don't want to say weaknesses. They just might not have as many elite level players as they once did. But I don't really look at them and see a lot of holes. I look at a defense that, if you want to talk about why they struggled last year, and especially the game that the season ended in, like, think of the Chief game. How did they get picked apart so easily by the Chiefs? Because they had backup linebackers in. Not even, like, backups, two of the backups were in there at linebacker. So, and Dodson, the one backup that was playing, might have been playing through injury because he had been dealing with that, right, the week before, and then maybe even left the game for a period of time. So, okay, linebacker was the biggest reason my defense fell apart at the end last year. Well, okay, Terrell Bernard and Matt Milano are back. So I'm good. I feel great. That's the strength of their defense. That I've got a defense where, sure, there might be some questions on the edge. Do you have a dominant pass rusher? Is Douglas going to continue playing at the level he did last year? Because he is getting a little older. What's your safeties look like on the back end? But I look at their defense right now, and I think the middle of it, the core of it, if I look at the middle, the linebackers, the nickel corner, and the defensive tackles, I feel like I've got as strong a unit as anybody in the league because I got no questions about Ed Oliver or Daquan Jones if he's healthy, and that's the middle of my defense at the front. I've got zero questions about their linebackers behind them, and then I just look one guy to my left. I've got zero questions about Taron Johnson.
The linebackers, by the way, behind Milano and Bernard, also Dorian Williams, another year in the system. I think that Dorian Williams is a guy that, you know, can make plays. We'll see what he can do if he can kind of catch up a little bit to, like, or I should say the other way, slow down a little bit to make those plays. But he really put some nice things on film last year, but he just wasn't quite there yet. And then, honestly, Baylen Specter's a guy they really relied on and, you know, thought a lot of at the end of the year. And then he got that back injury early in the Steelers game. He's one of the guys that missed the Chiefs game, obviously. So, yeah, I think. And then they go out and sign Nicholas Morrow. And that's a depth piece. That's your Tyrell Dodson replacement. He had over 100 tackles a couple years ago in Oakland, but they're trying to make sure that doesn't happen again. Let's get connected with our fans. Let's go to Marvin in Buffalo. Hi, Marvin. You're on WGR.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Hey, just...
Good, thanks.
You guys were reiterating what I said to the gentleman on the phone. I think the defense is going to be better. Poyer and Hyde are done. I'm an old guy, and they were done. They were slow, and you guys just were saying that. I'm glad that they're, but we're not talking 4 or 5 years ago. Trey White never came back from the knee injury, let alone what he has now with the Achilles. And I truly believe the defense is going to be better just by virtue of the guys coming back healthy, Milano. But Williams, I just don't understand. You know, you guys love McDermott, love the guy, but I cannot understand why he had Klein in there over Williams. I don't care if that kid, he was twice the athletic ability. And he this thing with veteran. He couldn't do, Klein was a big reason why we lost that game.
Okay,
I would have rather had Williams make a mistake being a young guy, but at least he could recover. Mm-hmm. Klein was he looked like a fish out of water in that game. So, but yeah, I think our defense is going to be better just by virtue of getting rid of the age, the old stuff.
Thanks, Marvin. I don't mind the point about Klein versus Williams, but certainly you see why they did it.
I do. I was someone that all along was critical of that. I even before that game, and then especially after. I wanted to see Williams play. I thought Klein, I just knew, you knew how that was going to go. Athletically,
he took advantage
Andy Reid was going to look at that guy and say, I am throwing at him all day. And Williams at least presented, maybe he'll just athlete his way into a couple of splash-worthy plays. Because I would expect he was going to make mistakes, too. I would expect Andy Reid was going to go after Dorian Williams the same way. And this is why I don't get hung up on it too much. Like, that week, I remember after the game, had made this point that, like, Williams should have been in there. And you haven't heard me mention it since. And a big reason why is what was the most likely outcome if Dorian Williams was in there? Sure, he could have made a big play, got an interception that Klein wouldn't have been able to, force a fumble, fly around out there. The most likely outcome, though, was that Mahomes and Andy Reid were going to torch him all day, just like they did Klein.
And in a different way. He'd be out of position, they'd confuse him. I mean, he's, you know, that's why McDermott did that. And Marvin, it's not about you love McDermott. No, he's a really, really great defensive coach. It's about the fact that at least you understand, like, why he would do something like that. I don't disagree, by the way, Marvin, that, you know, looking back in hindsight, maybe Williams would have been the better play there. I just don't know if it mattered, to Joe's point. Like, I mean, six of one, half dozen of another. They beat Williams probably just in a different way that they beat Klein because he's young and he doesn't know what he's watching, but Klein certainly couldn't keep up, obviously.
Yeah.
But I respect the point, Marvin. I do.
Well,
I understand where you're coming from on that.
And in his overall point, he throws in the thing about Williams and Klein there. His overall point was that the defense is going to be better. And let me just say this. If I look at the results of last year, how high of a bar is that really to clear? They were 11th in DVOA last year. I mean, doesn't it just come down to health, though, right? Like, they're comparable enough to where if they stay healthy, 11th, 12th best defense last year in totality, like, if they stay healthy, I'd expect them to be top 10.
Let's continue to get connected with our fans. It's brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Bobby, who's in a car. Go ahead, Bob.
Boys,
good. Go ahead, buddy.
Good. Dude, just two quick questions. One, what do you think? I know everyone's counting Micah Hyde out, but I mean, he hasn't really announced anything. So I still have, you know, this thing where I think he might come back. And if he does come back, what type of role do you think he'll play? And the second question is, how much say does Terry Pegula have in the draft? Thank you so much, guys.
Okay. I'll take one at a time and then. Oh, and then you tell me what you think, Joe. First of all,
okay.
I would say Mike is having his charity softball game in a couple weeks on Sunday, May 19th. We had him on the air here last week. He said he was still undecided. The Bills went out and drafted Cole Bishop. They re-signed Taylor Rapp. They signed Mike Edwards. I don't know if there's a role anymore for Micah Hyde. I'm sure the Bills would love to have him as part of the team, but I don't know how much he would play. And I think that it would really take for him to say he's coming back for very little money. And to be quite honest with you, I don't know if he would want to do that.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that, Joe?
I would. I have two thoughts on that. probably neither of which are likely, but I'll throw them out there. One, if he was to come back, would he want to do it at the softball game? In front of all the fans, announce it?
No, I don't think the Bills would operate like that. The Bills would tell him probably not to do that. I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, I think the Bills would want to announce it in some other fashion or way.
I figured.
That's not typically how they operate.
I figured. The only reason I threw it out there is just because, of course, that would be a super cool moment if he was coming back and a way to do it. But you're probably right.
I would say this, Joe. If it was to happen, we'd probably get an indication before that, and then he would make that announcement. Not like, oh my God, out of the blue, here comes, it's like WWE. Oh, that's Micah Hyde's music!
Right, exactly. The other thing I would say is, I wonder if we don't hear much from Hyde on this or the Bills by now to the start of the year. Like, he's someone that workout fiend in Arizona. I've seen the videos of like him going crazy in the off seasons. That if he's going to stay in shape and football shape, and he really only wants to play for the Bills, like, I wonder if a circumstance could change where middle of the year or even any point during the season, they run into injury problems and they give him a call to see how in shape he is.
I agree with that. That is a typical Bills move. Typical any NFL team move, but typical Bills move, which is, okay, is there a guy out there? They did it with Cole Beasley. They did it with John Brown. They do it with these guys. I mean, Josh Norman. That's right. It's exactly what they do. I would not doubt that whatsoever. On Terry Pegula and his influence on the draft, look, I know people think that the owner's picking the players or Sean McDermott's picking the players. Brandon Bean runs the draft. His scouting staff, they set up their board. He sets the direction of the organization. Terry Pegula, of course, as the owner of the team, if you're going to draft a franchise quarterback, is going to have to feel comfortable with it in some regard.
Yeah.
Okay? That said, otherwise, I would say very little influence, if none at all. The only influence I would say that Terry Pegula would have is if he said, hey, I read something about this guy. Can we check into this? Or, like, that would be my kind of interpretation of how it would go about. He lets Brandon Bean do his job. And here's proof in this because, while Terry and the team has never come out and said it, there's a lot of sourcing, and Ty Dunn wrote about this at Go Long, and I can tell you, too, this is true. And Jim Monas was the assistant GM in Buffalo in 2017, and he has said on record many times, Terry wanted Patrick Mahomes. He wanted him. Every day he was like, this is the guy. But at the time, they hired a new staff, Sean McDermott was there, and they let the new staff do what they needed to do to evaluate how they wanted to set the direction of the team going forward, and it just didn't fit for drafting a quarterback that year is what it was. So that's all you need to know about how much influence he does or doesn't have.
Can I also throw this out there? You want more proof that Bean has the autonomy to do whatever he wants in the draft? They just traded with the Chiefs. I mean, I don't know that Terry wouldn't have done that, but normal sports owner behavior would not have traded with the Kansas City Chiefs there. Just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, and look, he is the owner. I mean, he has a right to have an opinion on his team. He owns the team. He owns the company. He owns the franchise. But to answer your question, how much influence does he have on the draft? I would say other than making sure that whoever you bring into his organization, especially a high-profile player like Josh Allen, he's going to meet with that person. He's going to know that person a little bit. He's going to get to know and understand and have an opinion on all of that. But that he's not picking the players, though. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio, Sneaky Joe DiBiase.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular-season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
There's a lot to unlock with Coleman. I went back and forth on him watching his tape. There were times I really liked him and other times I was uncertain. I wouldn't call him sudden in his movement. I wouldn't say he's a burner. You'd probably say his play speed is above average, but he's not really a burst or second gear guy. He certainly has good hands. He can make those crowded environment catches. Again, that gets back to the big receivers. I think that his size and his overall traits profile would suggest that he's a boundary X type receiver. I finished my evaluation saying that my sense is there is more to unlock with Coleman, and there's no question there's a looseness within his body that's there to be developed.
It is a fascinating pick from that regard for the Bills. Keon Coleman, number 33 overall, first pick of the Bills in the 2024 NFL Draft. That is Greg Cosell there on One Bills Live. I think that's kind of where a lot of people lie on Coleman, which is, well, there's a lot to like, but can it translate, right? I think that's where it really lies here. I put out a video this morning. I do these, less than 1 minute videos a lot now, and just kind of asking fans to reply with some questions that I might have for them. And the one I did today, Joe, was what's your favorite draft pick for the Bills and what's your least favorite? And I would say several people said favorites Keon Coleman, and several said least favorites Keon Coleman. And I think that's where it lies, which is, there's a lot to say, like, man, I really like this kid. Like, there's a lot to like about him. And once you draft a player, it becomes yours. I think fans have more of an affinity. Even if you didn't like him, you warm up to him. And you hear all these great things about him. You see all the highlight reels. So that's natural. But there's certainly a segment of fans, whether it's here in Buffalo or media analysts or anyone, who go, I'm still not sure how this translates, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. That's why it's almost a little bit of both for me, in that it's my favorite pick because it was the receiver I've been waiting years for them to take, and it's also my least favorite because I still have severe questions about the player, and the more and more that I listen to and read about him, it makes me think that he will be more successful in the league as a slot player. And I just don't think that's, one, available to them, and I don't think that's what the Bills plan on him doing. The Treylon Burks comparisons are very evident in terms of the profile. And that was one where he's one where the Titans have maybe even admitted this, that they just used him wrong. The whole first year, they like, okay, big guy, athletic, let's throw him out there. Let's put him out there on the outside, go win some jump balls and, you know, get the ball in his hands. And then within like 2 years, it's, okay, no, this is a slot receiver. And I just don't want to see the Bills make the same mistake, unless it's not a mistake, right? That's why I don't want to assume that he'll just be exactly the same. I just don't want it to go that way, where, okay, we spend a year trying to make him into something he's not, and then we have to readjust. But again, of course, I am definitely open to the possibility that he'll be able to do it, that he'll be able to go out there, play the role Davis did, be better at getting open than he was in college, and at least be a Gabe Davis replacement. I'm definitely open to that happening, despite the fact that I'm kind of afraid that it's not.
I mean, part of this is coaching. You got to develop him,
right?
I mean, it's not like you just bring him into your 20-year-old, hey, go do your thing. I mean, he has to be coached. He has to be developed. Yep. And he has some natural skills and natural abilities that they can take advantage of. But that's on Adam Henry, and that's on Joe Brady, and that's on Sean McDermott, and that's on Brandon Bean, and everybody who surrounds him. And I do think the Bills, you know, for all the things we can say here and didn't get over the Chiefs and all these kind of, you know, failures they've had in the playoffs or whatever that people want to bring up, which is fine. I think the Bills do a good job of developing players. I do. I think the player development of this organization is as good as it's been in pretty much my lifetime, at least since maybe the 90s. And it's better than most teams around the league. Look around the league, compare it to, right? Like, the Bills are the second winningest organization over the last 5 years, and it's not just because of Josh Allen. Of course that matters. But if you take a look at some of the players that developed, there's always been that generally, like, that year two to year three jump with a lot of guys, right? And you look at the drafts, a lot of the drafts over like year, you know, 2018, 2019, people are still in the league. I think that whether that's with the Bills or not, it just goes to show you that, you know, they've drafted players who've developed into someone. So you have to have a plan to develop this kid as well. And you have to have faith in your coaching staff to develop him and how he's going to fit. Now that's on Joe Brady, right? How is Joe Brady going to use him? Last night I referenced the show MGM, BetMGM, that I was on with Trista Crick. And she said to me, basically, like, I think, Joe, there's this thought that he's not going to play much and they're going to have to take time to develop him. And I kind of shot that down. She asked me, and I said, no. Brandon Bean said he's going to play. Like, he's going to play. Now, that's great, But Joe, he's got there could be growing pains here. If he's going to play as much as Brandon Bean kind of indicated he's going to play, and maybe it's as much as Gabe Davis. I don't know. That's 95% of the snaps, right? Yeah. If he plays that much, he might be able to get a lot of targets and numbers, but there's probably going to be some growing pains as well going along with that.
Yep. Well, because what's the alternative? If he doesn't play...
That's right.
I mean, this is why I did a... the fantasy draft, the season's already begun for the sickos out there. And I did one yesterday, first one yesterday on Underdog. And it was it's deep. It's like 20-something rounds. And with my very last pick, I just threw a flyer in Mac Collins. Let me throw that at the end. Because if this doesn't work, if Coleman, or even if it works to a degree and there are growing pains, remember, he's been compared a little bit to Rashee Rice. And in not every way, but some ways. And Rice, if you look at his season, like, it took a bit. Like, he was doing some things early on, but he didn't really get going as one of their top guys until midway to the later portion of the year. So if Coleman has a similar trajectory where, all right, maybe at the start it's not like all 90% like you're saying, and there's a little bit of a slow play because this and this needs some cleaning up. Well, who benefits from that? Like, the other guy I would expect to be playing his spot is a guy that had 94 targets 2 years ago. And I don't necessarily want in any world Matt Collins to get 94 targets on this offense, but I think he's the insurance policy as I see it at the moment.
Joe, if I look at the Bills roster right now and look at their wide receivers, can you pull up, do you have their depth chart? I can give you the names.
I actually have it open.
Or
I have
not
it
even
open.
A depth chart. Yep. Okay, their roster. Okay. Where do you slot Quintez Cephas? I ask this because I do my chart all the time where I update the roster, right? I try to make it like a loose depth chart. I'm not beholden to it. I can move guys up and down. I actually struggle with where do I put Quintez Cephas? Look at that chart. Here's what I had. Samuel, Coleman, Shakir, Hollins as your four.
Yep.
Then Shorter, Isabella, Shavers, Thompson, Hamler. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but where would you put Cephas in that group?
I would want to lump him in a tier that goes from, like, my tier after Hollins as the fourth guy would be Shorter, Hamler, and Cephas. Like, those would be my next three that I'm very curious about, like, what their role is going to be. I almost want to cheat a little bit because, like, Shorter, maybe just development and special teams, like, maybe there's a role for him no matter what, as a draft pick that didn't get to play. They may just want to get a look at that. So he's kind of his own thing. For me, otherwise, it's kind of Cephas versus Hamler. And in my preference, Isabella, like, I fell in love with him at camp last year because I liked what I saw from him at camp, and he had that speed. Right, that elite speed that got him drafted in the second round. But he spent a year in the Bills, and he didn't really get asked to do that much, didn't get on the field a lot. When he did, he wasn't much of an impact in the limited snap. So I'm kind of over Isabella as an idea a little bit. My new guy that I'm most curious about is Hamler. I'd like to say I'd rank Hamler above Cephas because he's a player they don't have in the top four. Like, he's small, he's 5'9", and if you go back to his 40 at the combine a few years ago, he ran a 4.27, so he's got elite speed too. But the reason I want to cheat and not just automatically put him over Cephas is I don't know what he is right now. He had big injury problems in Denver, and I'd love to sit here and tell you, hey, elite speed, put him out there, but I don't know if he still has elite speed after the injuries he's had.
I think he also couldn't get on the field on the practice squad with the Colts.
I mean, too.
Like, they never, right? They never did anything with him. Right, he was on the practice squad of the Colts last year.
He might just be shot. Like, I thought he was decent and even good in his first, you know, stint there with Denver after being a second round pick. But right, if you can't, the Colts didn't have a very deep receiving core. Like, if you couldn't earn a spot there, then I've got real questions about how much athleticism you have left.
I mean, who knew, right? We're talking about explosive playmakers, speed. Oh, they already had the guy. I didn't have to draft him. It's KJ Hamler. And I mean, who knows? I'm not kidding. Like, it could be. I mean, we don't know that. But that they grabbed the guy very early.
Yeah.
And they've referenced him, Joe. They have said, like, talking about the receivers, KJ Hamler. I'll tell you what I did, though. I put Cephas. I agree with you. I have Samuel Coleman, Shakir Hollins. Then I have Shorter. Then I put Cephas right after him. Then I have Isabella Shavers Thompson. I put KJ Hamler at the bottom for all the reasons you said. But for me, like, I don't know what this guy is right now. I'm just going to put him at the bottom, and who knows where he can rise up to.
Right. Hamler, by the way, I've got him confused with someone else. He did not have, like, major leg injuries. He had
a medical issue.
He had a medical issue. He did miss, yes, like, a whole season for Denver, half a year, with a torn yes, pectoral. Yes. But the reason that he got waived and his football career in Denver ended was because he had been diagnosed with pericarditis, which is like a heart thing. So, you know, maybe he can still run fast, but even if it's not injury, there still might be health questions.
We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap up your Tuesday on the Extra Point Show. All right, rolling along here on the Extra Point Show, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio, sneaky Joe DiBiase. Tomorrow, Joe, I will be coming at you from Syracuse University. I'll be doing the show from out there.
All right.
Going to go talk to some kids at SU. I call them kids, right? It's weird for me. I always talk about college athletes and call them kids. And people say they're not kids, they're adults. I get it. I call them kids. Like, I don't know. It's just a phrase. It's not meant as some sort of insult. It's a term of endearment, actually.
If you are, not to age you, but I think if you are double the age, is that the rule? Double the age, you're allowed to say kids.
I don't know. Is that the rule?
I don't know.
Where did this rule come from?
It sounds right. I feel like I've heard it along the way somewhere, but I can't tell you where.
It's like unwritten baseball rules?
Like, I couldn't get away with calling them kids. You could. You know what I mean?
Oh, I think
is that the right? I can't. I can't
you
call.
Now? How old are you now?
28. I can't call Caleb
kids.
Williams.
You don't say
a kid.
College kids?
I would say college kids as a group, but I wouldn't. You know, maybe I would even do it just by accident, but like, I wouldn't call Caleb Williams a kid. Like, that kid in Chicago is great. Like, I would never say that because he's like, what is he, 4 years younger than me?
Right. Joe, wait a minute. The Bills just drafted two guys that are almost your age.
Yeah, that still happens. How old's Ray Davis? It's like 36 that they just drafted in the fourth round. He's older. He's not that old.
He's going to be 25 in November.
Ray Davis are the same age.
Yeah, Josh is the same age as Ray
Davis.
Like, you couldn't call Ray Davis a kid unless you call yourself one.
I mean, hey, well, listen, when LeSean McCoy was here, remember he had his incident in Philly, like a police incident? There was bar fight or whatever. You remember that?
Yeah.
I remember during that whole period, he like did an interview and he's like, you know, I've never really been in trouble. I'm a good kid. That's what he said.
When he was like, what, 30? Or 29?
Because I'm a good kid. That's what he said.
Huh. Yeah, like I would never refer to myself in that way.
I just think it's a normal term to say college kids.
That's true.
Whatever you're talking about.
That I agree with. Yeah.
Right? So I'm saying tomorrow, like, I'm going out and I'm going to be talking with students at Syracuse University. I'm going to do this show from WAER Studios, actually. I'll be in their studios doing this show. And then I'm going to talk with students and people who work at WAER. Now, what's funny is when I was in college at Syracuse, I worked at the rival radio station, which was called WJPZ. That is Z89. It's a top 40. It's like Kiss 98.5, right? Like, they play that kind of music. I did some DJing and music. We had sports. We had the Orange Women basketball team. We had the ladies. And, like, there was play-by-play, stuff like that. There was this little sports show I did. But when I was there, Joe, you weren't allowed, like if you were on one or the other. It was a rival, right? It was literally like Anchorman and meeting in the alley and fighting, okay? And it was either Z89 or WAER. Well, times have changed now, and apparently, like, people do both, which is great, and they should have always been able to do that. The more experience you can get in the business, the better. So I felt weird. When they reached out to me, WAER, I had to say, like, hey, I worked at the rival 30 years ago. And they're like, yeah, we don't care about that.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So that's good.
That's so long ago, I just, like, whatever, I would think.
They do have a Media Cup basketball tournament, and they used to play it at the Dome. I don't know if they still do. And they take, like, and it's a big deal between, like, it's not even, I don't even think the one radio station. I think it's WAER against the Daily Orange newspaper. It's the writers against the broadcasters in a basketball game. And there's this huge like cup they play for, and they play a basketball game inside the JMA Wireless Dome.
Hmm. Wow.
I mean, you played where did you play 11-day power play?
Harbor Center. Harbor Center, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
When's that when's that happen?
That is going to be in a couple of months, so we are not too far away. We'll have it this summer. The exact day I have somewhere nearby that I can find. It was
we're talking about that.
Yeah. 11-day power play. So our community shift, our shift for Team WGR will be Thursday, June 27th. It runs the 20th through the 30th at Harbor Center.
Okay, before I head on out, I'm going on Eric Wood's podcast today, and Eric sent me a note and said, you have to make a Kentucky Derby pick. I'm like, I have no idea what horses are running. I had to just, I'm looking at this list, and I'm just going to
pick your best name, your favorite name, just the funniest name even. Yeah.
So I'm going to do that. I even looked at it. I'm saying, is this who it is? I'm looking over the list right now. I'm leaning towards, where was it? Hold on. There was one here I liked. Well, Forever Young, because there's a couple songs I like from my youth called Forever Young. I'm like, maybe that'll work. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, check that out. Saturday Night Buffalo podcast with Eric Wood. We're doing All East Game Day in Buffalo today as well with Matt Bove. But Sabres Live is up next here on WGR.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in-store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.